How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, welcome to it. Happy Thursday, 7:16 with JR, Simmer, and Hammer. We're with you until 10 o'clock this morning. Still to come, $100 in Gabriel Pizza gift certificates. It's our big game party contest. Somebody's winning $100 in Gabriel Pizza. Beauty. We'll do that before 10 o'clock this morning. Mike Johnson is our TSN hockey insider. He will join us 1 hour from now. We'll set up Sens and Canes with Mike, who is in town to do the television broadcast tonight. So we'll look forward to that. And coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to speak with Julian de Guzman, one of the most capped, as they say in the soccer business, players in Canadian national team history. And we're going to talk to Julian about what it's like to play in Honduras. Apparently, it's something else. He's done it a few times, including the one time where Canada got absolutely shellacked 8-1 back in 2012. Canada, of course, playing Honduras tonight in a World Cup qualifier. Huge match. Julian de Guzman comes up in just a couple of minutes. Wanted to quickly touch on the news from the Red Blacks last night, which I think it's best described as disappointing but not unexpected. Devontae Dedmon has been working out with National Football League teams since the Red Blacks season ended. I believe it's either six or seven teams that he worked out for. And last night, the Red Blacks announced that they have released Devontae Dedmon to pursue, as they called it, an NFL opportunity. We have now found out since then that that opportunity will be with the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins are going to be signing Devontae Dedmon to a contract and bringing him, we're assuming, to training camp next year, which means we are no longer, at least for the time being, going to be hearing this.
Taken at the 37, Devontae Dedmon. Straight up the middle, 45-50. Now to the outside, into Edmonton territory. 45-40, 35-30, 25-20, to the 10. End zone, touchdown, Ottawa! No flags, Devontae Dedmon takes it to the house, making four touchdowns in his first 11 CFL games.
And, of course, he would add another after that. That A.J. Jakubek with the call right there, he would add a third touchdown last season, a fifth overall in a grand total of 16 games. No player in CFL history has returned more kicks for touchdowns to begin his career. No surprise that there would be interest from the National Football League. So this morning, and listen, I'm of mixed emotions, and Simmer, I'm sure you are as well. You love watching the guy. I don't think it's arguable that he is the most exciting player in the league for a lot of reasons. He was maybe the only reason to watch the Red Blacks this past year. But at the same time, these guys come up from the States trying to make it to the NFL and being able to sign for some money to support family and pursue a career. So from that perspective, you absolutely love to see it.
Yeah, I really do, JR. And it's funny, we had Donnie Granato on talking about the East Coast League and the way it works. And hey, I know we've had our discussion about the rules and everything else, but I'll be honest with you, and I'm sure you might feel the same because I know you really like the player. Like, this would be more reason why I would probably tune in to watch the Miami Dolphins play. So yeah, it hurts the Red Blacks and you're trying to rebuild. But this is part of the league and not directly because, of course, you have the different rules and everything else. But can't imagine there's many American players that come up here that don't have the mentality of, well, I'm going to try to prolong it because even if I can make it back onto a practice roster, you keep kind of chasing your dreams. So, yeah, it's tough for the Red Blacks. You're trying to rebrand. You talked about as well getting them out in the community. And you know, you're trying to do a lot of different things here. And then all of a sudden he's gone. So you certainly wish him the best of luck. And like I said, I'm excited to tune in and see how he does in the National Football League.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, he's got to make it too, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not a guarantee. Yeah. There are a ton of electric kick returners coming out of U.S. College, but, you know, he's done this at a professional level, albeit in a different game on a different size field. But I just love the way the guy returns. Like, he is fearless, and he's a north-south runner, and I think that's what they love in the NFL.
Is that a highly sought situation, JR? Because a kickoff, to me, it feels like, and I may be way off, it's become less and less of a thing. Now, is that not on punts, but on a kickoff? You know, I mean, most times
it goes through
the end zone, but still having that is still a big deal.
Sure, but it's the punt returning. I don't have the figures in front of me. I would say, 80% of kickoffs don't even get returned any longer?
It sure feels like
not even worth the gamble of either a turnover yourself or a penalty or the guy not even getting back to the 25. So I think a lot of teams say, we'll just take it at the 25.
But the punt return game.
Yeah, the field position is huge.
Yeah, exactly. And if you can get a guy that, I think the average punt return is less than 10 yards. Okay. If you can get a guy that gets you 5 more yards, we just know how hard it is to grind out any kind of ground in games. So a guy who can add something in the return game is much sought after. Well, so we wish Devontae the best. And, I won't say part of me hopes that he doesn't make it and comes back to Ottawa. But and we're going to replay later on, the real kind of moment, I think, for all the fans was his appearance on the postgame show here on TSN 1200, where it was after one of the games in which it might have been that one in which he had the kick return touchdown, punt return touchdown. Yeah. In which he really just kind of broke down and talked about how much he loved Ottawa coming up here, and just that was really cemented the relationship between the player and the city.
Yeah, no, and love AJ's call, and you think about the games, JR, when a guy gets any type of return now, just a momentum shift, right? It's almost like your offense charges onto the field all fired up, so yeah, still a big part of the game.
All right, your reaction to that is welcome. Text us at 12-1200, standard messaging rates apply. You can tweet at us at TSN1200. We'll continue to talk about it throughout the morning with you, but at 7:22 on this Sens game day. You may have to dual screen it tonight because we got a huge, huge World Cup qualifying game for Canada tonight down in Honduras. Now, if you look at the table, Canada at the top, Honduras at the bottom, you would think a bit of a mismatch. Canada should clean the floor with them. And maybe that's so, and we'll hope that's so. But based on history, when the game is in Honduras, maybe not so fast. To talk about that, to the Gabriel Pizza Hotline we go, and welcome one of the most capped players in Canadian national team history, man who's got some history, in playing in Honduras, Julian de Guzman joins us this morning. How are you doing this morning, Julian?
Very well, very well. Thank you for having me on the show, guys.
Thanks a lot for coming on. So I don't want to revisit maybe one of the darkest times for the Canadian national team, but an 8-1 loss in a World Cup qualifier in Honduras back in 2012. You were a member of that team, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Take us back through the lead up to that game and playing in that stadium where Canada will play tonight, what the atmosphere is like, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, when I look back at that moment, we had everything on the table there. And it was a matter of us getting a result, whether it was a tie or a win, to get us into the hex. And, we were very unfortunate to, not just with the result, but the way it unfolded. But I think in this sense today, much different scenario. It seems as if the tables have turned more so, where now we are the dominant figure in the region, as you can see in the standings as well. And, for Honduras, who have played 4 home games in this round, they haven't even got a win yet. So they've lost 3 games, tied 1 at home. And, I think this is a great opportunity for us to pretty much come back and prove to the rest of the world that, Canada is not just a team that participates in these tournaments, but they could be one of the better, if not the best team in the region. So, tonight's game is very important for many reasons. And I think those who have experienced that horrible result, the 8-1 loss, there's a few guys that are currently playing in this match today who have experienced it. So they will be the true leaders with regards to how we go about this match.
What are, beyond the caliber of the two teams, and you've laid it out, certainly Canada should feel good about its chances for tonight. What are the specific challenges, though, of playing in that particular stadium?
It's everything that happens before you get into the field, right? You go through, the travel is never easy. You're not even welcomed with the nicest, love or remarks. But, that's where I think the mindset in terms of how Herdman has created this bunch, psychologically, it's how do you get over that hump before you even get to the field and eliminate and deflect all of those, distractions. So, you'll start to see a much different environment. And as I said, you'll see many guys holding their guns and escorting you to the hotel, to the buses.
Hang on. So, you got people with guns that are escorting you? That's got to be a little disconcerting, isn't it?
That's not your everyday thing. But, in CONCACAF, when you go to Honduras and Salvador and these places, that's the norm on what protection is meant for you to be, right? So that's the protection you need to make sure that you are able to, get your sleep, get your meals, and you know, entertain fans of that sort. So I think it's never an easy welcome whenever you go to these environments. And I think, you know, there's a big chunk of players that have played in these environments already. You know, guys like Atiba, guys like Milan Borjan, Sami Piet. So that's to name a few, and they know exactly what they're walking into, and that's why it's very important. That's going to be the true leaders behind those moments before they even enter the pitch.
Julian, the other part of this is if you get out early, they'll turn on themselves and the fans will turn on the team. How important is that for Canada, for where Honduras is sitting right now? I can't imagine that's a happy fan base.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of pressure on Honduras. I mean, this is a chance for Canada to actually, you know, really hit the nail in that coffin for Honduras. And, you know, again, as I said, they haven't had a win yet out of the four matches they played at home. So we cannot allow that to happen. And it's almost like the first 45 minutes will really dictate on what direction this match could head into. And that's why it's important to, you know, kind of dictate the game, but not try to win it from the first minute. You know, you want to be able to, you know, be well-positioned, well-structured, be patient, and then strike when possible. And that's the beauty of our team. You know, we have all the options up front that are capable of putting the ball in the back of the net between guys like Tejan Buchanan, Jonathan David, Kyle Larin. I mean, that's exactly what you need in these type of environments to come away with a result. So the moment you get to the 45-minute mark, and if we're up on the board, you know, 1-0, I mean, that's going to be even more pressure on Honduras. But even though if it's 0-0 and the match is showing that, you know, it's balanced or Canada's getting their chances, you know, that's going to keep the fans very nervous and also pissed, which could actually turn against the home side.
And we're talking to Julian de Guzman, former Canadian national team member, Canada playing Honduras tonight. Just back to the environment for just a second. You talked about, you know, guys with guns sort of accompanying the team, you know, to the hotel and from the hotel to the stadium. As far as, like, are they pulling fire alarms in the hotel? Are you getting phone calls in your room at 3 a.m.? Are people throwing coins at you when you're at the field? What are some of the unique challenges of playing, especially in one of those Central American countries?
I mean, you just named a few things, of course, that those are the things that typically happen. Yeah, you get the odd phone call in the middle of the night. You'll get the coins as well, bags of urine tossed at you.
Bags of urine?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. You'll feel things splash on you, and then most likely it's not going to be water. So I've even heard cases where players have been on the pitch for Canada, and I won't name who, but, you know, there's been water breaks, and the opposition's medical staff will come onto the field and would hand over a bag of, looks like water, but apparently didn't taste like water.
Oh,
so you'll get all the little bits and pieces that you'll never hear in the headlines. But these are the things that kind of lead up to why it's very hard to enter in those hostile environments. And I think that's, you know, that's the biggest hurdle to overcome, because in terms of on paper, when you look at on paper, you mm-hmm. know, we are the better team. It's mm-hmm. very clear. But what happens when you get to the pitch? And that's why, you know, that typical line of 90% of the game is mental comes to play. And it's very important for these guys to remain strong and you know that their qualities are there. But it's a matter of making sure that they have that confidence before they even enter the pitch.
Of Honduras, Costa Rica, El Salvador, and Panama, and you would have experience in playing in all of those environments, is there one that's any worse than any of the other, or are they all kind of similar challenges?
Similar, I would say, you know, if I was to put it in the order from the hardest to the least, and based on those names you mentioned, you know, I would say Honduras would be the hardest. El Salvador is not far from there. But then Panama and Costa Rica. Costa Rica would probably be the kind of the nicer places to play in, but still never easy once you're on the pitch. And only due because the lifestyle in Costa Rica, I've been there and I've actually had a good time there away from football, but I don't think I would ever have a good time enjoying myself in the places like such as El Salvador and Honduras. And again, you know, when you enter some of these cities, you're entering some of the most, they say, most dangerous cities in the world, right? And that's between Honduras and El Salvador. And those are some of the things you see in the headlines at times. So that already kind of gets you going mentally. But yeah, I think Panama was one of those crazy scenarios where night before the game, You know, against Panama, you get the fans outside throwing a block party, and then that was going on in until the wee hours in the morning, and you know that definitely had an effect and impact. And even in the game itself, I remember a case where we were playing, and suddenly the lights just shut off. You know, and it kind of messes with your head a bit. You know, you see the team getting momentum, and we're getting comfortable, and suddenly the lights shut off. So there's always little tactics or CONCACAF tactics that happen behind the scene, but also sometimes on the pitch you'll see. And just a matter of us being able to cope with it, understand it, and just be resilient. And that's kind of the things that we've seen in this men's national team for Canada throughout this course of the qualifiers.
And is it that, Julian, exactly that? This is a whole different ball game now. Players know the gimmicks, all the things that are going on. And hey, at the end of the day, the mental toughness and mentality of this program is completely different now.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you're getting players who are coming from successful club situations, and you know the confidence that they're bringing to the table now as a group. That there's nothing like it in the history of our soccer program. So to see what we are witnessing, you know, in terms of how this team has done well, you know, with their domestic clubs, but also collectively, I think that's the biggest piece where they're able to bring that together for their country and go into these environments. I mean, went to Mexico City, got a result there, beat Mexico in Edmonton. I mean, those are kind of the highlights that. We're starting to see something brand new in terms of this version of the men's Canadian national team. And I think today, playing in Central America against Honduras is another big test, but this is exactly what we'll need to face to get to the World Cup if we're really serious about it.
All right, the final question for you. This group of games, so two games on the road, you mentioned how the two toughest may be just in terms of environment, Honduras and El Salvador, and they'll play in El Salvador a week from now. And then they've got a home game against the United States, which right now sits second behind Canada in the table. And no Alphonso Davies for any of these three games. You mentioned some of the other guys that need to step to the fore, but how big of an impact will Davies' absence have during these three games?
Sure, this is again testing what the teams have been about, you know, the brotherhood and the unity that they've been able to show match over match. So it's important that this team is able to display that on the field, given that, you know, the star player is not there. And that's the thing. I mean, in the past, I think we've seen many national teams where it's always been about one player, two players, maybe three. But I think in this case, this is about the team. And, you know, they'll do it for Fonzie. And you know, we wish him a successful recovery. But as the team goes to battle tonight, I mean, it's going to be important that they stick together. And this is another big test for them to show that, you know, it's not about just one player. It's about the group. And
all right.
I think that's what we've seen in the past of the Canadian national team matches in the World Cup qualifiers.
All right, good stuff. Where are you watching the game tonight?
Oh, I'll be in the studio.
Okay, all right, sounds good. That's probably an appropriate place for you. All right,
exactly.
Really appreciate the time and the insight this morning, and we'll all be watching closely tonight. Thanks for the time.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, fellas.
All right, there's Julian de Guzman, former national team member for Canada, on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza is the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. Again, if you're interested in the game, and who wouldn't be, really?
Yeah.
8 o'clock is the kickoff time tonight.
Yeah, and it is also, JR, with all the gimmicks and stuff like that, in a sense of, you know, when you really, and you go into any raucous stadium in Philadelphia and people are throwing stuff at you, then you go and talk to the individuals and you realize as a group, you know, again, eliminate some of the stuff. And when it comes to the gun stuff, really sitting down and understanding why are they there. Well, they're not there because all of a sudden a soccer fan is going to come up and shoot you. They're there to protect you because, you know, that's just the way it is in a country like that.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure what would be more off-putting if I hadn't experienced it before. The guy running along beside my bus going to the stadium with the machine gun, or the guy lobbing the bag of urine at me when I'm at the field. I'm not sure which I would be a little more disappointed in or a little troubling.
Yeah,
but that's just me. Okay, 7:35. Thoughts on the game? How excited are you for Canada, Honduras tonight, or maybe more so Canada, United States on Sunday afternoon? That's really the biggest match coming up over these next three. Let us know what you think. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. We're back to talk about the Sens and the Canes, and we're going to hear from The president of business operations for the Sens, Anthony LeBlanc, guested on our brother station 580 CFRA about the efforts of the owner to try to get things opened up to allow more fans at games here in the short term. We'll hear from Anthony LeBlanc as well when we come back right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Welcome back, 7:41 here on a Sens game day Thursday morning. Mike Johnson will join us coming up just after 8 o'clock, our TSN Hockey Insider. He's in town to do the game on television. On text at 12-1200, unsigned rights, excellent interview with Julian DeGuzman. Had no idea of the nasty business aimed at the visiting team in those Central American countries. That comes from unsigned this morning. Yeah, it, he went through it, and he said that, you know, of the four countries that Canada will play in Central America, the two that they're playing in this group of games, this week and next week in El Salvador, they're the nastiest. Yeah. They're the nastiest piece of business. Yeah. So, again, and you raise a great point, Simmer, that if Canada can get out to a lead and maybe be, you know, carrying possession and looking like they're the better team, that the home fans will turn on the home team.
Yeah, and the shenanigans that go around at JR, you just have to boil them down in a sense of, hey, you got a bunch of fans. If you ever went out and actually talked to them, they'd probably be over talking to you. You kind of disengage. Not that they're going to do that. Oh, no, I'm just saying, JR.
If I'm bringing urine to a game to throw at a player, I'm not sure there's any reasoning with a person.
The urine person. I'm just saying hostile fans when I've been places. And, you know, you see the issue you have with soccer around the world is a lot more. I have more of an issue with the racial outrage that goes on with players and that, but hey, you overcome it. But my point with the guns as well, there's a few things. First of all, when you're visiting a country, and I've been in some crazy places, that is really that, hey, they don't want anything to happen to foreign people. And this isn't like soccer fans walking around with guns. This is like making sure you're protected. And at the same time, you go into a lot of these countries, JR, if you really, again, I guess use that term, boil it down, the people that are in the crime business in Honduras or anywhere else, they totally understand. Do not ever touch a foreign person, because that's when things go next level. But as I said, you have to understand what you're dealing with, talk about it, and it just feels like, hey, this is a whole different mentality for this Canadian squad.
It's interesting, you know, kind of rank, you know, the most difficult of the four countries. And when you think about it, like you said, Costa Rica is probably the so-called easiest. And you think about, of those four countries, where do people from other countries like Canada vacation the most, right? It's where you probably feel, first of all, it's really nice, but it's you feel safe. Well, that's Costa Rica. And then I've heard people that go to Panama. Yeah. I don't know of anyone, and I stand to be corrected. Yeah. Don't know a lot of people that run into in my life that said, hey, oh, I heard you're going south this winter. Yeah, heading down to Honduras. Yeah.
Or El Salvador.
I'm going down to El Salvador for some flight time.
I have this total vision right away of Bush and Reagan. Anything to do with Iran Contra, you know, I think of Central America, I think of war and drugs, those two countries right there. Yeah. So I agree with you. It's, but for Canada, like I said, a chance to kind of shine. And I guess from a depth standpoint where you no longer feel not that Alphonso Davies doesn't make a huge difference, JR, but you kind of feel like, wow, Jonathan David is one of the most sought after transfer players in the world right now. There are other players there from a Canadian. We've never had that depth like that.
All right. 8 o'clock tonight for the soccer game. 7 o'clock tonight will be the Sens and the Canes here on TSN 1200. And of course, no Drake Batherson. We should get an update today from the coach on the extent of Batherson's left ankle injury. But they've already named Brady Tkachuk as his replacement to the All-Star game. And there is no reason to believe it. It's going to be significant. He's going to miss a period of time, whether it's an ankle break, whether it's a high ankle sprain. Drake Batherson is going to be out for some time. So we'll hear about some call-ups today, I'm sure, as well. As far as Aaron Dell, the Sabres goalie who laid the hit, it's a 3-game suspension. NHL player safety levied that last night.
To summarize, this is interference. Batherson suffered an injury on the play. The Department of Player Safety has suspended Aaron Dell for 3 games.
There you go. Short, sweet. Well, we edited it down, actually. They kind of went through the whole thing, but you know, they term it as interference, which it was. So 3 games is a suspension for the Sabres goalie. I think most people, just based on suspensions in the past, and it's you know, we haven't seen a goalie suspended for an on-ice incident in 15 years, so this one makes, that's why this one is unique. Yeah. But I kind of think you and I were spitballing about this yesterday. What would he likely get? I thought two to three games. So that seems like it's kind of on the mark.
Yeah, it does, Darren. And I guess this case of, and I go back to kind of late January and, you know, some of the plays that happened in hockey and you've got a fierce rivalry or anything involved with Brad Marchand, it goes next level. And there isn't anybody that wasn't saying, God, what a dirty play. But I think it just really turned quickly to a guy like Drake Batherson, who people are getting to know, is having a terrific year and was headed to the All-Star game and just realized, that's just such a shame. You know, the suspension's not going to do much for anybody involved. And curious when DJ Smith talks today, whether or not it's brought up. And then I also wonder, as we fast forward to the 17th of February and they go to Buffalo, how the tone of that game's going to end up be. Stay tuned and we'll find out.
Yeah, your point yesterday was that, you know, when DJ Smith woke up, you know, would he have felt like the response was enough? And you kind of said, you know, you look at what the Avalanche did last night, taking on Taylor Hall for the rest of the game after his hit on Nathan MacKinnon. And that was, I think we can agree now, it was MacKinnon, unfortunately, doing the damage to himself. Now, he was injured on a hit by Hall, but it was MacKinnon's own stick that caused the facial injury, which resulted in him being out for the game. But it didn't matter to the Avalanche players as they kind of made life difficult for Taylor Hall for the rest of the game. And that was, we'll say, an accident, whereas obviously the Dell thing was deliberate and everybody knew it was deliberate. Yeah. And there were some verbalizing from Brady Tkachuk and Austin Watson for the first little bit. And after that, relatively speaking, the Sens were quiet as far as any retribution goes. And I went through the text from yesterday and all the response, and people were disappointed.
Well,
in that.
And again, Jared, this is just my own opinion. And the fun part of it, and I listened to CJ and AJ, and you've got to sit down with AJ because he's getting so soft at this point. I couldn't believe his take. And he makes great points. Hey, I don't worry about Ottawa. And then CJ kind of took my tact, and I'm not going to say there's even a right or wrong. My opinion is that, first of all, and people say, well, I don't worry about them sticking up for each other. Well, when was the last time that one of their young stars has gotten run? And I'll say this was a little bit of an issue last year when Timmy Stutzla was getting bounced around by Montreal. I'm not saying that they're shy. I'm not saying they're not a tight team. But when I'm going a step further in DJ Smith's mentality of dressing players, well, it's absolutely a lost opportunity. And this is my opinion because I'm building my team for this, where if I had nobody in my lineup, I kind of understand. I also understand it's a goaltender. I'm not expecting anybody to run him. I just would like. And the big one last night, and I didn't watch the whole game, JR, but was Eric Johnson had Hall behind the net, and he's just giving the cross checks to him. And Eric Johnson plays like that sometimes, but you know it was a little bit extra. So that's just my gut feeling. And like I said, let's see how it plays out. But when I'm building a core and do I think in the playoffs, and as you said, does this mean teams are going to come and push Ottawa around? No, I'm not saying that. But every little incident that happens, and I'll go back to Stutz against Montreal last year, and now with Batherson, well, if this is what I'm building for a team, then, yeah, I don't mind you going above and beyond, and I don't mind you taking a couple of penalties on their skilled players in a game late January against the Buffalo Sabres.
Aussie John texts and says, isn't a 5-0 shutout retribution enough?
Oh, not at all, Aussie. Like, the Buffalo Sabres, where they're at as a franchise, and for Ottawa's at right now, it means absolute squat.
Okay, tonight's game against Carolina will be the, I guess this will be, the third? But overall, in this run of games, and Ottawa's got four straight home games and a road game, and then four more at home, and then a road game, and then four. They've got, 11 home games coming up. And there will be either, like tonight, no fans or for the first three and then for the other eight. At this point, according to provincial regulations, there will be a maximum of 500 fans. As you can imagine, that is a huge hit to the bottom line of anybody and any business that's going on right now. And I think there's a bit of confusion as to way the regulations are being enforced in this province. The president of business operations for the Ottawa Senators, Anthony LeBlanc, guested on CFRA earlier this morning and spoke about the owner's efforts to try to get the province to rethink its plan.
We're absolutely behind the science, but the science is the key to someone like Eugene, and people forget he's not just a hockey guy. He made his money to be in a position to own a professional sports franchise in the pharmaceutical industry. So this is a guy that gets science. And so I'm here today to talk to you about more about the economics and really the nonsensical nature of the everything that's been put in place. But Eugene's approaching this purely through science. And that is what he, I talked to him a number of times yesterday. And that's what he's doing. He's employing scientists that he's worked with over the last several of decades. So he can put together, an argument of why these current restrictions that are in place for facilities like Canadian Tire Center make absolutely no sense from a scientific point of view, in particular when you compare it to other facilities. And I'm not here to bash any other facility that has the ability to open to 50 or 100%. I applaud them. I welcome it. I want to be in restaurants. I want to be able to go to retail outlets. But the fact that retail outlets here in Ottawa, the large, big box retailers, can bring in almost two times the amount of people into their facilities that are not requiring vaccinations. Oh, and by the way, there may be 50 to 100,000 square feet compared to our 700,000 plus square feet. At some point, you just have to start looking at them and going, it just doesn't make sense.
And listen, we may disagree on certain things that the owner has done, or lots of things in the case of some of the fan base. Mm-hmm. I completely agree on this one. And it is the inequity overall on how this is being, whatever the right word is, enforced, especially as things are going to change and things do open up a bit on Monday. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. It really doesn't. Yeah. And so let's see if this, a team of scientists he has employed? Yeah. He is going to have to put them on a retainer with a lot of speed going, because the time is ticking for the get to province to change their mind. Because again, there's 11 home games between now and February 21st. That's 11 home games in which the maximum they're going to be allowed to have in the building is 500 fans, and they may not even bother opening up at all, given the cost that just opening the building is. So that is a huge revenue loss for the Ottawa Senators.
It really is, Sharon, and I mean this very sincerely. First of all, if I was the owner of the Ottawa Senators, I'd be suing the province. This is ridiculous, in my opinion. And the thing that's been brought up, and I I'm not in the medical background, but I never even thought of it. I find the Costco thing ridiculous, and I mean that so sincerely. And then people will say, well, everybody has a mask on. I never even thought about the unvaccinated part, right? Mm-hmm. Seriously, like all you're doing, show me your.
You have to be vaccinated to go into the Canadian Tire Center.
Show me your Costco card and you're good to go. Go buy whatever you want. And the idea that every person in there has their mask completely secured and that everything's fine, it is ridiculous. Like, it honestly is. And from the Sens perspective, now I don't know how the government works here in Ontario. I'm assuming it works like it does in the United States. What do you need? Well, you need a meeting, you need power, you need lobbyists. Now, can you mobilize something that quickly to make something happen? Probably you can't. But I have no issue with him having an issue. And I, as I said, I'd be coming after the Ontario government for some of the losses here. And you'd explain to me why the hell this is being done the way it's being done. So, like I said, don't have any problem with it whatsoever.
I'm sure the lobbying is being led by Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, right? With the Leafs and the Raptors in the backyard of Queen's Park.
Oh, absolutely.
They hold a lot of sway. And I know that Doug Ford certainly doesn't make all the decisions. But he has final sign-off on some of these things. And Doug Ford has, I think, is a pretty big sports fan. And that shouldn't be the reason you do something or don't do something.
No.
But when you look at this entire topic and the reasons that were laid out of all the people, I guess, I'm a little bit confused as to why they would they've gone in the direction that they have, where they've kind of picked and chosen the direction they are as far as kind of how buildings are going to be opened up or not. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit surprised that because they're pro-business, the Conservatives are pro-business and all that other stuff. And boy, their actions have suggested, well, not that they're not, but they've kind of gone half-measured in some cases. The business community certainly isn't happy with the recent lockdowns, et cetera. The science table would argue the other way. They're trying to find a happy medium. Yeah. And it's kind of left everybody confused as to the overall direction.
What does it always go back to, Jer? I'm assuming it goes back to what they think is going to help them in the next election. I mean, that's what I'm assuming, but like I said, I don't know. Now, do I think Doug is looking out for the safety of all of us? Well, I'm sure everybody has a conscience, but at the end of the day, it's politics. And like I say, it really is. And for the Sens perspective and for people and for gyms and for restaurants, and as I said, I go to a restaurant. If it's 50 or 100%, Jer, are. Now, I guess because the mask comes off, you're having a bite to eat, but I have my mask on. I go sit at my table. I have my bite to eat, and I leave. Like I said, I just don't understand the rationale, and it was such a great point I never even thought of you know, who knows who's carting into Costco from wherever that isn't even vaccinated at the end of the day. So I can understand the frustration. And, hey, you went on last year where you in good faith, and I wouldn't know the numbers, but Ottawa, like a lot of other teams, was like, okay, we got to do forward business here. We can take a massive financial hit, but let's power forward. And then you look at your other partners around the league, and the revenues are off the charts, and the United States are just, you know, going, you know, full guns a-blazing, and you're sitting here with nobody, and you don't have an ability to pay your bills. Be pretty pissed off.
Well, yeah, and last year, and again, I'm not here to, we have a much better record in this country, and I'm very happy to be a Canadian. Based on the way that overall through the entire 2 years that we have, and that's my personal opinion, how we've gone about our business just as an overall, I feel, you just have to look at the amount of deaths, which is the most important thing at the end of the day, and per capita way lower in Canada than the United States. All that to say, last year, if you're a Canadian sports team owner, you looked at games being played in the United States, and in a lot of cases, or in most cases, there were empty buildings there too.
Yeah.
This year,
until later in the
this
year.
This year it's the exact opposite, right? You're turning on your television. You got an empty building, and you're turning on your television to any game in any place being played down there, and it's a full building.
Yeah.
And you're kind of you're thinking to yourself, like I think to myself, just as a fan, I look at this and go, this is just crazy. It's such completely opposite. Ways to attack this particular issue.
Yeah, and again, the spread of it, and as I said, we don't want to go into the science part of it, but then the other part, and I totally understand the frustration for people. This is not last year when all of a sudden it's around. If I've been double vaccinated, and even if I've had a booster or haven't had a booster, what is the threat to that? And when you honestly, and I hope I'm accurate on this because I looked it up yesterday, I believed 75% of the people in ICU are unvaccinated. So, like I said, where is a legitimate threat and what's the frustration? And in the United States, just quite simply, JR, because it's always about politics, just how much vaccination versus unvaccinated is turned into such a big issue where,
it's totally politicized.
Well, yeah, exactly. We're in Canada. For the most part, I just don't. I absolutely trust. Hey, if I'm told that I should be vaccinated, I'm personally going to get vaccinated.
The Chief Medical Officer of Health for Ontario is going to be speaking today ahead of the restrictions being somewhat lifted on Monday. So we'll see. I'm not anticipating they're going to change their minds, but we have seen a change of course before. But we'll see. We'll see what and if any announcements. I'm not guessing that Kieran Moore is going to announce a decision like that. If they were to say, you know what, we've changed our mind. We're going to allow, stadiums for concerts and sports events to be indoors, let's say even 25%, they're going to go up to 50 if things continue to go in the right direction by February 21st. Do they go from zero back up to 50 or is 25 a happy medium? 500 just seems... To use Anthony LeBlanc's term, in my opinion, it does seem nonsensical when you compare it to other places like the big box stores that are allowed to be pretty much wide open. All right, your thoughts on that are welcome. Text us at 12-1200. Tweet at us at TSN 1200. We have the Sens and Canes for you tonight at 7. 5 o'clock will be our pregame show. We'll take a break. Top of the hour news and sports update is on the way. And then Mike Johnson will talk hockey with us. The TSN Hockey Insider is coming up next on TSN 1200.